Okay, so what I want to do today is to give the shiur on the stuff you guys started to learn. But what I want to do also is to give an instance in how when you learn a masechet and see different pieces, and some of this we've seen, some of it is new material, how then it becomes really cool to see how a posig deals with a practical halachic question, a burning halachic question. Most of what we do in shir, and in shir not just us, but like in yeshivos in general, is you learn kiddushin, you learn the sugyos in kiddushin, right? Or if you're learning hilchos kiddushin, then you usually just learn like Gemara Tur, Shulchan Aruch, Tur Beis Yosef, Shulchan Aruch, Neos Ekelim kind of thing. So in do today is a little bit different because it's sort of, if we're learning Be'ion, when we take kind of a step back and say, okay, we've started to learn at least some of these issues Be'ion, how do we look at this not from a theoretical perspective, from a more practical perspective? How does the posuk begin to grapple with some of these issues? I think it's really interesting. Some of the issues we have done in the Gemara, some issues we have not done in the Gemara, but I thought it would be useful to kind of take a look at this question and a little bit of fun to do something a little bit different. So that was sort of the idea. I think today should be an interesting exercise in how a posuk looks at sort of a practical question. Good? Sound like a plan? Here we go. So here's the scenario. I looked it up again. I actually realized that I was it was without halachic consequence, but there were one or two slight details that were slightly off. So I just want to correct them and clarify the case. Again, it doesn't really affect the halacha very much. So here's the scenario. This is a situation that took place in 2002, and this is one of the summer camp stories. So here is the situation again, just to remind ourselves. So you had three young men and three young women. The slight edits are up to two, two young women. The slight update is as follows. The young men were nearly 14, apparently all of them, that's at least how it was reported, which is odd but true, according to at least this report, and the young women were nearly 13. Either way, they were all over bar and bat mitzvah, respectively, which is why it doesn't really matter very much, but let's just get our facts straight, at least as I saw them reported, best of my understanding. The case, by the way, as I said, was a real case that came before Rav Sinderovich. Rav Sinderovich is a posek in Milwaukee. He has a Shilos and Shuvos that are not widely known called Atzei B'Samim, and he wrote this up in one of his Shuvos in Simon Chavez. So that's where it comes from. If you're interested, Rabbi Jachter has an article. You guys know Rabbi Jachter from TABC, from Tina. He has these practical halacha articles that he publishes, and it's available online, which is where I saw the case. So you can go see. Pretty much what I'm giving over is a summary based on the tshuva, based on some of the things he talks about. Maybe a little bit more, a little bit less, but that's one of the major sources for this discussion. Okay, here's what happened with these kids. So two of the boys walk away. It's one of the boys is remaining with the two girls. One of the girls turns to the other girl and says, if you really love her, the other girl, right, so then you're going to take this bottle cap that I'm now giving to you. So the girl who did not receive the bottle cap back actually gave him the bottle cap and said, you're going to marry the other girl, that if you really love her, with this bottle cap. He takes the bottle cap and he gives it to the other girl, about whom the question was, do you love her? And he does not say anything, but he gives her the bottle cap. Okay. Right? So Maisa Shahaya Kahaya, are they married? Is there any reason for concern here? Okay? So that's kind of the question. By the way, we don't know, this wasn't reported, but probably there was some laughing and some giggling, you can imagine, right, going on. I'm just reconstructing it, right? It's hard to see kids really doing this with a totally straight face, although it's hard to know for sure. As I mentioned last time, the other detail that's relevant is that one of the two other boys who had walked away returned. The case was only adjudicated 2 years later by Rav Sinderovich, and so the question was, he couldn't remember whether he actually saw the giving or not, and he couldn't remember whether or not the boy had said anything, who had given her the bottle cap. So far as he remembered, he did not say anything. So there's no evidence of a Hareyat Kudah Shetli type of scenario. Okay, Adkan. So how does Rav Sinderovich deal with this, and has any posek deal with a question like this? So first of all, there's an orientation. What's the orientation here? Do you think the orientation is L'chumra or L'kula?
L'kula.
L'kula. Why L'kula, Shai?
You want to be easy on them
because
they're teenagers.
Good, they're teenagers. If they did something, probably is just stupid, right? That's what kids do. They do dumb things. Okay, good. You don't want to stain them for life. Good. But what's the flip side, though? What's the reason to be machir?
You don't want them to have manners.
Good. Well, right. Wouldn't have moms. Right. Good. No, because if they're really married, and then that could be a real issue of mom zeros. Absolutely. Right.
More generally, just want to uphold halacha.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Fine. That's true. In any case of halacha, absolutely. But why here more so than other areas of halacha potentially? Maybe. Well, you have the mamzeros issue in general. Ishus ishus is a very severe area, in part because of mamzeros. It's a very very weighty kind of area of halacha. So what opposing does in this case is they look for possible arguments to be makil. Because at the end of the day, you're weighing these two. You want to try to be makil in this case if at all possible, but you're mindful of the mamzeros flip side of it, and of the ishus and of the integrity of halacha, and so on and so forth. We want to kind of look at different areas. And Rav Sandorovich in his tshuva looks at six different areas. Okay, here they are. I'm going to list them right now. Okay, and the first two are going to be connected, and we're going to go through each of these systematically. Okay, dot kiddushin. Okay, what? Which overlaps with Dvar Moshe Leib. We're going to look at them together. Amira v'kiddushin, which also overlaps with Dvar Moshe Leib. Obviously, those Dad and Amira are interconnected, but we've looked at them somewhat separately. They're in separate sugyos to some degree. We're going to look at them a little bit separately. The status of the bottle cap, okay, which does not seem to be Shavu Bruta, but we're going to have to look at Shavu Bruta question.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What about the ring? In addition, there's no ring with the bottle cap. What about that? Other than its value, there's also a question of ownership. Did he own the ring? A chassan has to own the ring, because, right, just like if I want to do a kinyan, I have to own the item I'm giving you, right? Certainly kinyan kesef. I don't own that money. If I steal money, or I take money that I find randomly on the street, and I never come to own it, and I give it to someone as part of kinyan kesef, no dice. So, presumably, you require bailus over the ring. In fact, have you ever seen the Masada Kiddushin ask that question of the chuppah? Right, it's not uncommon for Masada Kiddushin to ask the chassan under the chuppah, right, does this belong to you? Okay, happened to me under the chuppah, very, very common. When I was asked, and when I'm in Masada Kiddushin, I ask as well. Okay, and you don't play any jokes, and I learned that at my wedding, because my Masada Kiddushin Rabbi Kanner Fogel from Teaneck asked me, certainly wasn't a Masada Kiddushin. Sorry. Rabbi Kanner Fogel was a Masada Kiddushin at a wedding for which I served as an Eid Kiddushin. That's more precise. And at that wedding, he turned to me as the Eid Kiddushin and said, do you, and the other Eid, do you think that this is a Shava Pruta? And I said, and brilliantly, I said, I don't know, I guess so. Which was clearly unsatisfactory to him. So he said, don't mess around with me, Sinansky. Is it a Shava Pruta or not? I said, yes, Rabbi Kanner-Fogel, it's a Shava Pruta. He says, right answer. So you don't want to mess around with these kinds of things. So the value of it, but there's also the ownership of the ring, which is the other question that's commonly asked. That's topics 3 and 4. Yeah. Topic 5, yeah.
Eden.
Is excellent, good, because it only seems to be one aid. Fantastic. Okay, and then the sixth one is it clear? Anyone guesses?
Katan.
Excellent, very good. Shmuel, why?
Read the article.
You looked the article? So it's not helpful. What? So you can fill in all the makoros as
I'm
going.
No,
you're looking at it right now.
Yeah, I skimmed over and it has all the...
Yeah, no, it has the headings.
Right. So.
Yeah, I'm reorganizing it slightly.
Yeah.
Those are all the headings. Good. Gadol and Katan. By the way, I'm going to quote a bunch of makoros. I'm not going to remember exactly where they're from, but Rabbi Jechter has all of them in the article, so you can take a look at them. What? You can send around like, I don't care. Okay. But in part, it's going to be based on some of the things that we see. So the das issue, right? So did he have das kiddushin? So Shmuel says, well, we have to look at the question of... Right, of Darm Shevelev. Because what, right? Because, again, Rav Samaradovich is trying to find an argument, sneef him the hawk out, right? Arguments to be make out. So what do? Right, what do you start with? You want to ask the question, well, does he have das? Well, he didn't say that he was planning to marry her, right? And so maybe with Shmuel, based on the Gemara Kiddushin, Daf Mem Tes, amazing that we saw, you want to say that, well, that Dvarim Shevelev, Enam Dvarim. Right, maybe that's what you want to say. What's the counter to that? Okay, good. Tosos. Which Tosos? Tosos right there in Kiddushin, right? Because what do we see Tosos says?
That something about how it's not Dvarim Shevelev.
Good. If Tosos says, remember, three levels, right?
If your intention is completely obvious, if it's a new
good. So Tosos is talking about the requirement of Tanai, right, of condition. And we know that the Gemara says that we learn from B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, right, and Menashe, that's in their deal with Moshe Rabbeinu, that we require a Tanai kaful, a double Tanai. In other words, just like Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, if you lead us to the war, right, in war, then you may settle me of our yardin. But if you do not lead us in war, then you may not settle me of our yardin. Hain and lav, both sides, so too, you need a tanai kaful, positive and negative formulation in general comes to a tanai, but then he brings the stira on the case of a person who wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, and in the end, for a purpose we're going to cut to the chase, Tosos seems to conclude that there are three levels. If it's down the case where we just don't know what you think, then we say Dram Shevel Evin Adar. If it's a case where there's what Tosos calls a quote-unquote Giloi Nilsa, I'm just moving along because we have to really speed this along, okay? Because it sure ends.
125,
right?
Yeah.
So, no, sure ends in half an hour.
I'm saying we had the period 50
minutes all roll over the ridge, right? Right? So if it's a Gilad Milsa, then Tosso says that what you still require a Tznai, but it need not be a Tznai Kafel. But if it's Muchacha Milsa, it's an Umdana de Mucha, 100% crystal clear from the context, then that's your intention, then we drop the requirement of Tznai altogether. So, right, and we generally accept Tosos's view. So if it's the case that Tosos is right and we accept that, then maybe we should say that similarly, it's not Mukhrach, but if you think that maybe we can say similarly that if it is the intention of this individual is so that he either does or doesn't want to marry her, and it's incredibly obvious from the context, maybe you can say that just as Tosos says that we drop the requirement of Tanai and Tanai Kafel, you don't have to say anything, and the Tanai is just presumed, it's just built in, because it's an Umdana de Melchach, the Amenas, right? Ki Hagavna, he engaged in the transaction to purchase land to move to Eretz Yisrael, so maybe similarly we say the same thing, that Varm Shevelevi and Varm does not apply to a case of Kiddushin, and we should say whatever's Mukhrach from the context is what's clear. What do you think is Mukhrach from the context? What do you think?
Probably.
It's not 100% clear, right? Because you can make the argument either way. Therefore it's not Mukhrach. Does he want to marry her? Because even though he didn't say anything, he gave her the bottle cap? Or maybe it's all a joke, it's just like a summer camp thing, and they're not really serious.
In terms of determining the umdana, are we allowed to say, based on evidence that occurred after the event, we can retroactively determine what his mindset is?
Excellent question. So that's the case of the Maharam in Rutenberg that we started to see. So I know we had some trouble reading it, but basically the case of Maharam is that afterward, right, the woman says it was just schok b'yama. Right? That's what she says afterward.
I'm saying, even if it doesn't explicitly say it, meaning, assuming because of the way that they're not engaging, pretending to be married.
Maybe. I don't know if that would be in Mukhrach. Because maybe, like, if you get married when you're 13, you don't live together. You just kind of, like, are married until you're, like, 20, and it's, like, socially acceptable to act married. But maybe. That's a possible argument. The Maharam had a little bit of a different argument. The Maharam's case was afterwards she said it was a schok, and basically the Maharam said that that's something we disregard. Right? And so the point is, right, and the Ramah codifies that in Shulchan Aruch. So the point is that that's something that we accept in the halacha. Right? And then the Ramah has that line in which she goes even further, right, which we saw. The Ramah says, and in general, we don't pay attention to umdinanos and asmachtos when it comes to kiddushin, right? But like to an extreme. And there's some discussion as to, in the Achronim, as to whether or not we really take that, right? Rabbi Jachter quotes there, machlokas between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Chazon Ish, how seriously do we take that, right? The Aruch HaShulchan seems to take it pretty seriously, the Chazon Ish kind of plays it down. But be that as it may, based on the Ramah, especially in the Maharam, should we say that, like, we don't really care about the context? Maybe. Right? So that's some question. So in summary, the question of Das, as it applies to this case, is inconclusive. Right? It's inconclusive. And if it's inconclusive, what's probably the most likely thing outcome? If you cannot prove one way or another?
Suffer.
Right? Maybe you have to just say that there's a suffix. Maybe it says, right, there's a tzad to be mistapik. Right? Or kind of say dvarim shibalev. Right? Dvarim shibalev. But the question is, where does that lead you? Because was it his intention to marry her or not? So it's not 100% clear what to do, but that's the issue. The issues are clear, but how to apply to this particular case is somewhat subject to question. But that's the first set of issues you want to look at. The second set of issues to look at is the requirement of, right, Amira, which is the thing we were just doing. Right? So tell me about Amira. Did he do an Amira in this case?
No.
Right? He did not do an Amira, and therefore I might say that they're not married. Right? Who did an Amira in this case?
So a third party.
Right? A third party. The girl who gave the soda bottle cap, right? Well, does her Amira count?
We don't see any case like that anymore.
Good. Well, what case do we see though? Talk to us about talk to me about Asuk Masvenia. What is the case of Asuk Masvenia in the Gemara?
No, but the difference is in that case it was him and her talking about
He has an Amira in the case of Asuk and Mosalinyan, but it's not at the moment that he gives the tabas for marriage. They're talking about marriage, they're planning to engage in a wedding, and then later on, at some point, maybe talking to Nibor, maybe not, he gives her the ring.
What about if they're talking about but he doesn't say anything explicit? Meaning let's say she does most of the talking.
Right, this is a further question, right?
This is the question. Within Asuk and Boso Indian, do we still need a requirement of some sort of Amira from him?
That's exactly this question. Exactly. And Shmuel's hitting it on the right. That's exactly it. As Shai said correctly, this is a third party's Amira. Does that count for Asuk and Boso Indian, or does it not?
Right.
So that is exactly this question. So there's some discussion about this issue. There's a Taz about it. The Taz seems to say that even if she talks, but then the question still is, okay, but does that mean it has to be her, or could it even be a third party? That depends on the Machlokas Rishon that we already reviewed in context of Nasan Huvyam Rahi. Right? That whole discussion, which we already had Shira on. But there's a big question about the status of that case.
What
does
Taz say?
Taz says that her Amira, the Kala's Amira, also works for Asuk and Bo'osolayim.
The Glavad?
Yes.
I guess that would clarify the question, because you could say that even if a third party works for Asuk and Bo'osolayim, the fact that it's a girl who's doing it might also further disqualify if you don't think that.
Maybe, although I don't think another man would be better than another woman, right?
But I'm saying if within
the Hikach doesn't mean some male in the world has the act of engage. It means you, the Mekadesh.
I understand. I'm saying if we say it's a third party within the Hakir of Nasan Huva Amrahi, if we say that her Amira has no legitimacy, then it would seem to be that any female third party wouldn't have any ground legitimacy either, because it's as if she didn't say anything.
Correct. Now, but the fact that the Taz says that her Amira does count.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Right, correct. That's exactly what we're saying. And that we could do one of two things with that. We could either say, therefore, so to the other girl's Amira counts, right? Or we could say, no, it has to be one of the two parties. That's all that works. Right, Taz doesn't talk about that. So I don't know of any traditional classic outcomes to talk about that question.
Does Taz say that the Kala works because she's considered one of the two parties, or...
I don't think he explains, but you're right.
Or is it just any meaning that there's... The Chassan is one person, and anybody else has considered to have the same status?
I don't think he says. I think Yesh Lachkor, that's exactly... This is the Nafkin, that's exactly your question. By the way, there are other poskim who disagree with the Taz. The Otsar HaPoskim, which is the classic compendium of poskim, and Aben Ezer, in particular, cites a number of Achron, a number of Mokan, but he says a number of Achron who disagree with the Taz, and said, no, Asuk Mosvenia is only his Amira. And if that's the case, then presumably, our case would be out.
Right.
Be an argument. So if you hold, like, those poskim quoted by the Otsar HaPoskim, then probably our Kiddushin is not a Kiddushin. If you hold, like, the Taz, then Yish Lachkor.
I feel like the Pshat of Asuk and Bo'osolinyan is that they both have to be, like, involved.
Right, because otherwise, why did it get that case specifically?
I'm saying if it was just the husband talking, I feel like, and then she's quiet, it's hard to say for sure that they're both, like, on board with it.
Well, that's a simple question of her to us. I'm talking about, right now we're talking about qua the requirements of Amira. Mm-hmm. Your point is good, but it's a separate issue of her to us.
Just about the mechanism of a soup.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that these questions ultimately boil down to the fundamental chakir about a soup and go, so inyan and about Amira generally, right? Because we asked the question. We said, how do we understand a soup and go, so inyan? Is a soup and go, so inyan what? is a sukin boso inyan a way, does it show that Amira is just about Giloy Das Balma? Right? It's just about Das. Or, no, assume there's still a formal requirement of Amira per se, a formal statement. But even an earlier formal statement can qualify. It doesn't have to be at the moment of Nazir Satabas. Right? So again, we have this metachakira about Amira. Is Amira merely Giloy Das, or is it about Amira proper? That has ramifications for how we understand Nasukum Yosoinya. What's Nasukum Yosoinya? It's what we call the Nafkamina Lahavana. There's a halacha that's clear, but we understand it in very different ways. If you understand Amira as a clarification of Das and Asukumas, then of course it makes sense. So the point is, he doesn't have to say anything. The point is, we just need some evidence that he intends to marry her, and then Mira adds that she wants to be married to him. Fine. So that's sufficient. Or no. Point is, he has to say it. Right? But it can be earlier, too. Lamai nafkamina, practically, well, can she say something, or can a third party say something? If it's a din of Amira proper, then maybe not. But if you think Amira is just Gilei Milsa of Das, then maybe a third party can say something, and if I basically in Shtika Koda land, I basically consent. Right? And I, right, Baharaya, what did I do? Right? I took the bottle cap! I listened! I said, without saying, I love her! Right? Mazel tov! Wow. Sounds like a Giloy Das to me. So ultimately, this question of whether or not who's Giloy Das and who's Amira and how Asukim Yosoinyan works likely hinges ultimately on the larger question of the nature of the requirements of Amira and how any chance
to do it. Wouldn't it, if it's a third party, wouldn't everyone agree that it has to be a Tokidid Ibor?
Not necessarily. Conceptually or in the Sugya?
I'm saying, I guess practically speaking, right?
Fine.
If let's say she says something and then 5 minutes later he gives her the bottle cap,
mm-hmm.
do we still hold that to have the same level of dealing this?
Plausibly. I mean, you're right. At some point we have to cut off the line, right? Because let's say you say, if you love her, and then he gives it to her 17 years later, mm-hmm. and neither one was married, right? Probably not going to be married.
It's like, okay, remember when somebody told me to read it? I finally got the
bottle. But that would disqualify the whole thing because that comes as some Amira, then it would work.
Just like,
Amira loves Whistle.
She's just like, what? What is this bottle cap? Why are you randomly handing it to me?
He says
nothing.
I don't
remember.
What okay. Do you possibly think he has to be most of the Toke that you were?
I want to say we do. I think so.
So, practically speaking, if it was...
This was Amira. I think
that is. This was...
They probably don't know for sure, but it was more or less immediate. I mean, Tof Tegidi was really, really tight, like 3 to 4 seconds.
Right.
But it was basically immediate, so... Is that a clock out?
I guess I could technically add another... Maybe. ...suffix to your case.
It's possible. You never know in these kinds of cases what's going to sway. What? That's a press. Okay. Another one. Okay. So that's the issue of Amira. Let's turn now a little bit to Shava Pruta. So, what do you guys think? What would you say?
That's something nice.
Is he so kach Shava Pruta?
Bottle caps lack of value.
What?
So the bottle caps lack of value.
Don't tell me what I reject her then. Tell me what you think.
Well, and the Kiddushin on Daf Yud Bet on the Aleph.
Good, we're going to get there in a second. First time, what do you think?
What's the question?
It's worse than Google. Yeah.
I got this.
What's the question?
The question is, the Silver Cap a Shavuot or not?
Does the Bottle Cap count as Shavuot?
How do you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
what is the well, what is the value of a fruit?
No, it doesn't
so,
have
complex,
because,
but...
It doesn't have... The bottle cap has
a few cents,
zero value.
Okay, let's assume it's a few cents. Is the soda cap worth a few cents?
Yes.
You can't. By the way, can you turn it in for 5 cents?
No. It says...
Of the bottle, right? The bottle has to be turned in for 5 cents? It's not the bottle cap, right?
It can't be the bottle cap.
Okay.
Nobody would buy a bottle cap from you for 5 cents. Nobody in the entire world.
Right, l'chora. Okay, l'chora, a bottle cap is worth less than a pruta. Right?
Well, then the whole thing doesn't work.
Good.
Except for Shmuel.
That's what I would say. So Shmuel quotes Shmuel, which Rabbi Jacob also happens to quote his hand.
Whoa, what a coincidence.
And And by the way, if you're ever researching a halachic topic, if every doctor has an article on it, it's very helpful. Very, very useful. It's very clear. It's very organized. He talks you through the issues. Very clear thinker. I'm biased. He's my Rebbe in high school. I'm proud of this. Okay. So, and Rabbi Yaakov, by the way, is also a Dayan. So he used to, it was a little sad, but he would take us really interesting things. We would help him with certain stages of Gittin, things like that.
So this is a little sad.
So he points out, Rosam Revich pointed out in the Tshuva, that, that there's a Gemara that makes it a little more complicated. So Gemara, as Shmuel said, on the Yudhi to Nal confusion. The Gemara says, in the name of Shmuel, that it's not enough for something to be Pachos Nishavavuta. Because even if Lamai said Pachos Nishavavuta in a particular location, there might be somewhere else in the world where it's worth more than a Futa. And therefore, Shmuel says, we have to be concerned that maybe in the world or out there, this is more than a Shavavuta, and maybe she would be married with. That's a big chiddush for a lot of reasons.
Even though I can't sell for a Shema Pruta, like, there's somebody out there who could melt down the materials and it would be...
No, but let's say, for example...
The question is, like, how do you determine value?
Let's say there's some random civilization whose currency is bottle caps, and in their civilization, a bottle cap is worth $2.
Good, and what if it's on some far-flung planet
but that, seems
that
irrelevant.
We never yet discovered?
That seems irrelevant, though.
Yeah, I knew. Why is it irrelevant?
Because it's all about, like, the like how its function in this...
Good. All value is particular to a society. All value is culturally dependent, inherently, right? Right? It depends on what you use for what, right? I mean, right? It also depends on supply and demand, right? Like, maybe there are no bottle caps on planet Zonk. And maybe on planet Zonk, right, yet to be discovered, if you had a bottle cap, you could sell that for, you know, for millions of
florps.
What? That's right.
I also feel like it's a dated answer.
What?
I also feel like it's a dated answer.
Florps.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes from a time where they didn't know much about, or didn't know as much
so
about.
So I don't know if I went that far, but it definitely is dated in the sense that it's geographically dated.
Right.
Meaning... No, but I'm saying it's not just a different understanding of how economics work.
No, not economics, meaning that they didn't, they were limited, and I mean, they didn't know all about all the civilizations in the world. When globalization, they can, you know, by the touch of a button, just access
exactly.
The internet.
Yeah, so that's basically what Cinderella says. He points out that there's an Aruch HaShulchan who seems to already take this out, right? And I think Rabbi Jack wrote that, right? The Aruch HaShulchan basically makes a point, I think it's in Ebenezer 11, I'll give you the past, that he says that if you can ascertain, he makes at least a suggestion, that, I don't know if you possibly...
You said Lamed Aleph Yud Ches.
But that what?
You said Lamed Aleph Yud Ches.
Yeah. Right? So, right, basically what he says is that he throws out at least the serious possibility that if you're pretty confident that it's not worth anything anywhere, then you're good to go. So, right, so Rav says, today, it's, as Shmuel said, it's beginner kal v'chomer and nosher kal v'chomer, right? With the click of a button, we can determine the value of a bottle cap in markets across the globe. Okay, is it possible that anything's possible? But at that point, it's a reductio ad absurdum. At that point, it's not meaningful to say that there's a din of shavu puta.
Who says
this? What? I'm adding that last point. But Rav Sinderovich basically says, on the basis of the Aruch HaShulchan, that at least this is a strong argument logic. Don't quote me the Gemara Daf Yabez, because maybe in today's world it's a little bit different. And maybe when it's basically definitely worth less than a pruta in any Western culture, even non-Western culture that we can identify, like how much further do you have to go? Do you really have
because
to find that about planets on?
Because of our world connections?
Yeah, in other words, in time the Gemara said, okay, maybe they thought in the next province over it was really worth it, it was really worth more, so I could realistically travel to a new location and that would cause the value to change even for me now. But if we can basically say that the entire planet Earth, the Soto cat, is not worth 5 cents, or it's not, right, clearly not worth a bhuta anywhere, at a certain point we should be able to probably say that it's pachos mishavar bhuta as a strong kula. Interestingly enough, he does not rely on this alone, but he does use it as a major factor to be nega. So he does think this is a strong argument, if not decisive in its own right. I think the reason he thinks it might not be decisive in its own right is because of the chumrah of ishes ish, because of the mamzerus ishes, because of the stringency of the issues that we're talking about. Issue four is the question of ownership items. Clearly, as we said earlier, a chassan needs to own the ring in order for the kiddushin to be chal, and that should be pretty evident, right? Okay. What was the question? Question is, in this case, does he own it? What do you think?
Where'd he get it from? Like a soda bottle from a gamp.
Got it from her.
Yeah, but she...
No, 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 the case. Who gave it to her? Shy. Yeah. Gives him.
Yeah, but she doesn't own
it. She gave it to him?
Not the one who got mad at her.
She doesn't have the right.
Well, then he definitely doesn't own it.
She definitely doesn't own it.
She doesn't have the right to give it.
She doesn't own it either.
She gave it to him.
No, she bought a water bottle. It was from the...
Let's assume it was hers, for the sake of argument. Hard to know for sure at this point, but let's assume. She gave it to him in order to marry the love of his life. So, you guys say no.
No, it looks like she... Why not? I don't know.
I'm just telling you, that's what I heard first.
She's
not
giving it to
her,
so why doesn't he acquire it?
No, she's only giving it to him. I'll deny that he'll give it to her. He fulfilled the tonight. Who said the tonight wants to get married to the girl that he loved?
I don't think she's
not like, the tonight.
Why are we assuming that she's giving it to him on tonight?
Like, I'm gonna ask the officer.
I don't think she cares about it so much. She's like, you better give it back to me.
For God's sake, it's Pothos Michelle Rapunzel. You really think she cares that much about it?
It's not like you have to give it to him and give it back to me.
Zonk.
It's not
that valuable. Okay, but
it would be cool if it was.
So the question is more of what her intention is. So it's an interesting discussion. So there's a rush. The rush in Kiddushin, it's Perakav Simen Chav, makes a statement that has broad practical application in many areas of Allah.
Wow.
It applies to Arba Mina. It applies to... What else does it apply?
Is this what happens?
It's an issue of...
Like every other like posik, it's like his statement just happens to also apply like everywhere in Halakha.
Well, no, think about this, right? It applies to talis. By the way, did you know that halachically you have to own a talis in order to make a rach on it?
Really?
Really.
You can't borrow someone's talis?
Well, you have to own it.
So you have to like give
letters. In order to make a racha. Ah, this is a big shangla. It's a big shangla. What to do? If you borrow, for example, let's say I'm a guest and I walk into shul and I forgot my talis at home. And so you know how like shuls have those talis about? And usually they're very short talis and they're not tough enough.
Yeah.
They cover. Okay. Right? Like that. But then let's look aside the sheer questions of how much of your body talis has to cover instead of long talis. Okay, so the question is, right, can I make a racha on that? It's a shangla, it's not so simple. So here's the yisod of the rush. It's very important yisod. The yisod of the rush is like this. If I'm giving you something, okay, Shai, if I'm the girl and I give you the bottle, right, or I give someone the bottle cap, with the intention of that person using it to get married, to fulfill a mitzvah, halachic obligation, or whatever, a halachic category with it. So he says, presumably, I gave it to you as at least temporary ownership, or even permanent ownership. Why? Because the whole purpose is I wanted you to do this mitzvah. So it's implicit, it's understood that what I was really transferring is not just to give you a physical item, but I was transferring titles, transferring ownership. It's yours now. The Rosh says this about Kiddushin in general. So for example, its question is if it's Tabas Shula, that's his case. If I borrow a ring and I use that to marry my wife, right? That did not happen for the record, for the recording. Not happen. It was mine, 100%. But if that were to be the case, okay, what would the halacha be? The Rosh says, no, you own it.
It's codified by the children.
Okay, and it's acceptable halacha. Why? What's the Svar of the Rosh?
Because why would they get it to
otherwise? So, l'chora, there are two subtle, but I think importantly different ways of saying it. One way is to say, because she knew the halacha, presumably, right? Or people generally know that you have to own the tabas in order to marry. So presumably that was the intention. Possibility one.
No.
Possibility two is a little bit different. Possibility two is, irrespective of whether you understood any of that, still, either way, my intention was, take this in a way such that you can halachically fulfill your obligation. If that means that you're going to need to own it, fine, you own it. Did I mean to give it to you so that you own it because I know that you need to own it in order to marry a woman with it? No, I didn't know anything. I'm total on my heart.
But
either, I wanted you to fulfill your obligation.
In order to fulfill either of those possibilities, the person would either have to know that the person, the most likely... The person giving it would have to say something to fulfill other requirements of fusion. Or if we're saying going with option two, then there's a shnai given on by the fact that you transfer ownership, but because you're going to halachically fulfill this requirement. Therefore, if you don't halachically fulfill the requirement, then the ring doesn't belong to you.
Right. Well, I think it depends kind of on these two possibilities, right?
It's endless. their loot.
Okay, fine. I hear you. Okay. But think about it from this perspective. What about our case? Actually, before we come to our case, let's talk about other areas.
I don't like the second reason, though. What is the second reason?
Second reason is not that I actually intended to... Not that the girl intended to give it to the boy. To make him the owner per se. That wasn't her intention, although that's what happened. What she wanted to do is to give him the ring in such a way, in any such halachic way, that he could fulfill his obligation. Meaning, it's not that she knew that ownership is necessary and therefore she transferred deed, transferred title. She didn't know anything. She's, again, I'm Haaretz. But what she did know is that she wanted him to be able to marry the girl that he loved with the Balka. So if that meant transfer of title implicitly, then fine, she was happy. Now, first of all, this has ramification of other areas of halacha. So for example, the Rush is similar, I think there's another Rush, forget offhand, but similarly says that the same thing is true with regard to a talus. Right? It's a famous position of the Rush with regard to a talus. And the Rush says, if I borrow your talus, it's understood that you want me to be able to fulfill the mitzvah fully, and therefore you're at least temporarily transferring title to me.
Wouldn't he draw that from the fact that we say that if you need to fulfill the mitzvah, you're allowed to use someone's talus to fulfill them because they would have in mind, they would want you to be able to fulfill the mitzvah?
That's essentially what he's saying.
I'm saying we say elsewhere that you're allowed to borrow someone's talus to fulfill it without asking them.
Right.
So the Rosh would say,
well,
the Rosh should say, in order to properly fulfill it, you can have ownership.
Does the Gemara say that by, that's a good question. Gemara says it's supposed to say by talus? Does the Gemara say it by, the Gemara says it by tefillin, maybe.
Right.
Tefillin don't require ownership.
So maybe.
It might be different. That's a double check. But yeah, that'll be a good question. I did that session. That's a good example. Okay, and also, by the way, the Rush may even apply to the Arba Minim, although that would be good too.
Awesome.
That's very nice. What?
I feel like it's applied, the Shabura applies the Rush statement to Arba Minim. In the context of Brahm Lulav on the first, possibly the second day, who cooked.
I want to say it's before the Mishra Brah, by the way. Yes, so which is where it goes. I know Rajasthan quotes Mishra Brah, I'm pretty sure it's long before that. Arba Minim is more complicated. But yeah, there's a requirement to Kacham Yacham Megum Rishon, you have to own the Arba Minim on the first day. So, because we know it's a big halachic question, right? What do you do with Kitan, and so on and so forth. But it's highly relevant for that. Now, would it apply to our case or not? Well, I think it depends on the two options that we made out earlier, right? Why?
Well, clearly, I don't think you're going to
say does she know? Like, do you think that the average summer camp 12, almost going on 13 girl knows that the chassan has to own the tabas?
No.
Right? Probably not. But she wanted him to marry her. Not her. The other girl. Whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe it's totally on those two explanations of the Rush, right? Meaning, if I'm an Aramanaris Doraisa, I just know I want you to get married, I just know that you have to give this thing to the other person in order to get married, then maybe Gufa, whether that was my intention or whether or not it worked, is totally on the how these two ways of understanding the Rush. And Rabbi Jacker does not make this one, but I think this is what comes out. Right? If we think that the shot is that the umdanah is, and he sort of gets at it because he puts the shiur in Russia, but bottom line is, I think it goes that way. If you think the umdanah is that she actually knew what she needed to do, and therefore she transferred title, and that's what the Russia is saying, then I think it would not work in this case because this girl presumably doesn't know that there's a crime of ownership. But if it was just that, I gave it to her so you can fulfill your obligation however you can, then presumably it would work.
These are different, like, achronim, hold differently.
So, Moshe has a tshuva, which we're going to tell you the exact siman and the exact chilak and siman.
Ebenezer.
I think class is over, so.
What?
I think class is on.
So class is over, yeah, no, yeah. So, Moshe says basically that it's, that in 1949 he had a case in which he said basically people in America were Amoratsim and didn't know the halakha and therefore you're not presumed to be married in this case. Kind of case.
Because he holds that.
Because he holds like the first tzad in the Chakira, I think. Chorot, that's what the Rav Moshe says. Aleph tzadi and Ebenezer? Fine. So Rav Sendirovich, based on that, wants to suggest that's another sniff lahak earlier because maybe she didn't actually transfer ownership. Quickly, And the other two issues. One witness. Pashka says you require two Edim for Kiddushin. So, look, Ora, at first glance, you would say, it's obvious that here you're not married, and indeed there's good reason to think so. However, there is a suggestion in the Gemara, in, I think in Gittin and Daf Samachay, that we should be machmir, is one view in the Gemara, that we should be machmir in the case of one Edim, which is shocking. Why this is required for other lungos? Rov Rishon and Achron think it's only Nidra Banan. Chumra nonetheless. The Mechaber Paskins like this Chumra. But there are, sorry, the Mechaber says you're not married, but the Rama says we should be Machmir for it. It's a big question. Should we be Machmir for it?
Seems counter to it.
Right? It's a strange kind of thing. It might only be a Chumra Nidra Banan.
Wait, we're Machmir for one aid?
The Rama is.
Wait, is, oh, this does not have nothing to do with the ownership.
Nothing does. It's topic five.
Like, why
one
is it?
Witness.
No,
yeah. One witness. So we're running out of time, so I'm saying this very quickly. There's a lot more to discuss about 1-8. I don't know if we're going to have a chance to discuss it, although maybe in our second parak stuff when we jump in a little after winter break, but that's a very, very short version of it. And then the sixth issue is the Gadol Katan question. L'chora, they're Gadol, right? Why would you say these 12 and 13-year-old kids are not gedolim, because we usually think of bar and bat mitzvah as an age, but that's not really what it is. Really, it's a function of whether you have simanim, right? And the question of whether or not you have simanim, physical symptoms, what we call secondary sexual characteristics, is really what's known as the chazakah of Rava, chazakah the Rava. Rava asserts and says, if you're a certain age, presumably you have that. However, there's a lot of lumdas about this, because that presumption may only work for Rabbanan and Daraisa. Marriage to Rabbanan and Daraisa. It's a deraisa, so therefore there's good reason to think. Hold on a second. There's good reason to think that maybe it's not so obvious that you're a full-fledged gadol.
The chazak derabba applies to derabban.
According to many, it only applies to dinim derabban, not to dinim deraisa. Some kid like landing is more for derabban. Yeah, we just like 12, 13. Oh, mazel tov.
Bar mitzvah. The fact that they're over
20, because otherwise.
Back to their really is that old?
Yeah,
12, nearly 13, and up. Just 12, meaning if I get over
12, might be a little worse. Not formally.
For boys and girls, the same age?
Yeah, the end cutoff. Yeah. Bottom line is there are some derivatives you can imagine based on all these. He has reason to be nikel. This is a relatively easy case. There are other cases looks at the amount here. But between all these issues, it was only one aid, and especially the Shavapruz issue, I think, is the strongest argument. And something that the ownership and all these things combined, he felt that Lamai said there's enough to make up. So he passed into his fellow shulos as well. But you see how all these different issues.
It would really suck if like you fell in love with a Kohen and like you got divorced when you were 12.
That wouldn't be good. No, not.